it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host. Welcome to the weekend, everyone. You know, it's been a crazy week. And as we're recording today, it's Tuesday. It's 37 degrees and raining and perfectly miserable outside, I'm going to say. I have joining me today Kane Twyman. Correct? Did I say this right?
You did.
We were talking names before. And Kane is a mentee of our old friend of the show, Quentin Harper, who is, you know, we're saying already, hashtag Quentin 2028. I'm just, you know, I'm putting it out there, Quentin. I know you're listening, Quentin. So so we're early in the fan club of Quentin Harper, the two of us. And you've been doing various forms of activism in the community locally. But right now, what I want to talk to you about is that sandwich at Arby's. No, I really don't. I do, though. I love that sandwich. I love that Greek gyro. And Victor Lewis here at the station is telling me I'm pronouncing that wrong. And you won't take a position. You're telling me if I'm ordering the sandwich and paying for it, I can call it whatever I want, right?
Yes, you can.
That's pretty much it. Yes. Yes, we can. That's what Obama was talking about all that time. My sandwich. I knew it. All right. So how does it come to pass? Where did you go to school? Let me back up to that. All the way back to that.
I went to school at UNC Chapel Hill.
I've heard of that school. Okay, that's a good school. That's wonderful. And what was your major?
Political science.
Political science. You and Chris Matthews, did you know that he majored in political science? You know, Chris Matthews on MSNBC, host of Hardball, mm-hmm. Is actually in the UNC Journalism Hall of Fame, even though he didn't go to journalism school. This is not my favorite trivia point about my beloved school, but he does not have a degree from anywhere in journalism. He went to, I think, Holy Cross, don't hold me to that, for his undergraduate degree, and he went to Carolina in graduate school in political science.
Wow.
Didn't study journalism. And if you watch Hardball once in a while, you'll see that that's true. You know, he's a good guy. He's on our side. I shouldn't be too rough, but anyway. So you studied political science at UNC, and tell me how this was. Did you love it? Did you love study? I took political science courses, but I didn't major in political science. Maybe I should have. Has my whole life been a mistake? Tell me.
I don't think so. I think you're okay.
So tell me about studying political science. What do you look at when, as a student of political science, what are you looking at?
Well, I remember when I was in school and I didn't really like the first 2 years of the political science
no?
degree, but I really liked the second two because I kind of figured out what I wanted to do, which is state and local politics. So
right.
I pay a lot more attention to like local elections and mm-hmm. state elections because that's kind of where policy touches people the most, I think.
Right, right. I think that's exactly right. I've heard a lot of big deal national politicians say that you should really pay attention to the most local of local, which is school board races, mm-hmm. city council races, county commissioner races. So local, state, and state elections, because that's, they say, where most of the governing is done. You know, the stuff at the highest levels. I mean, even governorships to some extent, but like Congress and Senate, you know, the House and Senate, they're much more. It's even higher than 30,000 feet, I think. I'm not sure there's air up there. You know, there's probably air at 30,000 feet. I think if you open the window in a plane, you wouldn't die at 30,000 feet, but I'm not positive. I think you probably would die. Okay, but. But I totally agree that the state and local stuff is the stuff that reaches in and affects your life the most as a resident of any given community. So you've been have you been involved in any local elected races? Have you worked on any elections locally or?
I did not recently. A couple years ago,
yeah.
I worked on a Chapel Hill town council race.
Uh-huh.
He didn't win.
Your candidate did not win.
He did not, no.
Well, then he's my kind of candidate. I'll tell you why. I ran for the school board in 1994 and proudly did not win. In 1994, everything conservative, starting at the Orange County School Board race in May, That was a really good indicator of what was going to happen in the national elections, in all elections in the fall of 94, which was the Republican Revolution when Newt Gingrich came in and all that. It was the off cycle, the cycle after Bill Clinton was elected. And I think it's fair to say that folks in the area knew that I was not conservative. That's probably the understatement of all time. But I'll say this in my defense. School board races are not supposed to be partisan, right, really, at all. And the truth is that if you held up that one of the people who won said after the election that he only ran for the seat because he saw that I was running.
Oh.
So flattering. I didn't realize I was such a big deal until that. And he said he thought I was just this is his terminology, not mine. He thought I was the boogeyman from the left.
Oh, wow.
But he said after he got to know me, he realized that that wasn't true. And I thought, you couldn't have said this 2 days before the election. Really? Really? Anyway, the truth is that on almost every single issue that you could possibly name that would come up that's relevant to a school board race, we agreed about everything. You know, we wanted kids to have a quality education. We wanted kids to be safe in school because school shootings had just started at that time. And, you know, there were just these various things. And we agreed on, gee whiz, just about everything except taxes. And it did come to be so that there was a bond that was voted on a couple of years later. And he voted against the bond, which would benefit the Orange County schools. The bond, thanks to Chapel Hill, passed. Okay. And Orange County schools got that money anyway, even though one of the board members, you know, was vocally against it. And as an individual, which he's perfectly free to do, voted against it. And then, of course, he was there very proudly at the dedication of Cedar Ridge High School, which was built with that money that he voted against.
Right.
Said, yes, just spell my name right on the plaque, but I don't want to give you a dime for it. And that, you know, and there it is, right? There's politics in a nutshell, is that we vote on things, and even if we don't agree with the outcome, we go along, you know. And I guess we'll be positive and look at it that way, that he said, well, I didn't vote for this, but we got the money, so I'll support the high school and all that stuff. It was kind of a weird case. But anyway, so the person that you worked for didn't win and, like me, was proud in his loss.
His loss, yes.
We won't say. No, but let's say his name. What's his name?
David Schwartz.
Okay. And what were his big issues? Why do you think he lost?
I'm not really sure. I think part of it was a lot of the people on the campaign, like, they were students, so I feel like we didn't get out as much as we probably could have.
Okay.
But he ran on the Chalt platform, and so
right,
everybody else who was running with that kind of won except him. So
okay.
It was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think he'll run for office again, or?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah? Oh, I hope it didn't put him off too much.
I don't think so. I think he's still pretty active. I'm not sure. I haven't kept up.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Anybody, you know, we're just about to come into an election year, and anybody who wants to run for office, you know, for a local office, I'm saying, I got to tell you, Congress is just a whole different thing. And we'll talk about that after our break, but the thing is about running for office at the very most local level is that you really get to learn your community that way. You go to all, like in the school board race, you go to every school, you have events at the schools. And if you're running for town council or county commissioner, you go to a lot of events and you get to meet, you get to see what a great variety of people there are. Very different interests sometimes. And sometimes competing interests with completely understandable and legitimate points of view that are in conflict. And it's really great to meet your neighbors that way and come out and hear. You hear more than just the soundbite or even just if somebody writes an op-ed, you get to hear a little bit more to what there is and where they come from on their positions. And you realize it's not so easy.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, the higher up it gets, I have to think that the problems and the sense of conflict and difficulty in resolving problems gets greater and greater. But we're not going to have a problem on our show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to let our advertisers speak to our listeners about the many solutions that they have for problems. And we're going to come back with Kane Twyman, and we're going to talk more about politics, and we're going to talk about affordable housing and all kinds of great stuff. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back. We're back with Kane Twyman. I'm stumbling over your name a little bit because I'm terrified I'm going to say it wrong. I don't know. We were talking a lot about names before we started. And I've heard people do things with my name that I just never would have. I didn't think the alphabet allowed that. And it's amazing how clumsy it can be with a person's name that you're just not familiar with. And we were giving a hard time to our good friend here, our very good friend, Victor Lewis, who helps us get set up here in the studio from time to time, and trying to make a mess out of his name. It's a tough job. You know, he's got a pretty straightforward name, I guess. His name is sometimes misspelled, but then you wouldn't care about that on WCHL, now would you?
No.
It's a great thing about radio is that at long last, spelling doesn't count. I love it. Okay. So we were talking about if you could meet a politician, you've studied political science, and if you could meet a politician of any age other than Quentin Harper, Quentin hashtag 2028, who would it be? Think, take all the time you need. Remember, people are driving and listening to the radio and don't want to listen to empty airtime. Who do you think you would want to meet? Other than we've mutually agreed to eliminate Barack and Michelle Obama, because that's obviously would be our first choice.
Obviously. So I was thinking definitely Shirley Chisholm. She was a Black woman politician, and she represented New York's 12th district in Congress, and she served, I think, was it 7 terms, and it was just amazing. I remember learning a little bit about her in school, and we just never kind of got to the full extent of like who she was and why she ran, and it wasn't enough for me. So I'd love to just like meet and talk to her about what it was like.
And say, what were you thinking? It was 1972, and nobody was thinking that anybody was going to beat Richard Nixon. Right. I mean, really, you know, Ed Muskie was running against Richard Nixon, and of course, he kind of vaporized him.
Right.
He withdrew from the race because, frankly, of a dirty trick that Nixon did and embarrassed him. And his wife had received treatment for a mental health issue, I think. Anyway. He withdrew from the race, gave a very emotional speech. I want to say in New Hampshire in the snow is what I remember, is that watching Muskie leave the race was very, very disappointing for a lot of people. And then George McGovern was running, and George McGovern was thought to be a very, very radical very left-wing guy, but in fact, he really wasn't. He got a bad rap. He was kind of pro-military, and there were lots of things about him that I think the Nixon campaign did a great job of defining the McGovern campaign. George McGovern chose Senator Eagleton to be his running mate. Eagleton was found to have received electric shock treatment, I think, for depression.
Wow.
And so he, you know, left the race in disgrace. And then, you know, that was it. And the campaign was sunk. And there was just like going to be no chance that McGovern was going to mount anything of a serious run against Nixon. He got the nomination, but he was already behind. And his platform was that he wanted to end the war in Vietnam. And interesting enough, Nixon ran in 1968. I'm telling you all this because it's clear to me that you were not born yet. but Nixon ran in 1968 saying he had a secret plan to end the Vietnam War. Yeah, and his secret plan was that he helped to scuttle Johnson's effort to end the war before the election. And Nixon not only did not end the war, but he expanded the war, and that was a lot of hooey. So McGovern was, you know, thought of as being, I don't know, an appeaser or whatever, you know, whatever Nixon had going, that, you know, he was going to end the war, but he was going to deliver to us peace with honor, and that somehow McGovern, who was a veteran, was not going to do that. And Nixon's campaign just did a great job of defining it. If any of this sounds familiar, you know, yeah, it does, right? He did a very good job of defining the other guy. And in the middle of all that comes Shirley Chisholm, who has the temerity to run for president in the Democratic Party. And I think that she got... I think that she won a couple of delegates at least, because I remember watching her speak. I am that old. Yes, yes, Chapel Hill, I am that old. I remember watching her speak at the convention. Yeah. And they don't let you, you know, as a failed candidate, one of the things about running for president and not succeeding is that if you have delegates, you're expected to get up and tell your delegates, you know, to endorse the nominee and all that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, she got up and spoke at the convention. And I, you know, that's pretty much the first I knew of her, really. Because, I mean, in the press and everything, you weren't seeing a lot of, you know, by the way, you know, here's Shirley Chisholm is also running. No, they weren't paying much attention to that, which is, that's this impossible hill that she was climbing. And I just wonder why. Why was she doing that? What would get you up in the morning and cause you to be on your feet 16 hours a day and work you know what off to do that? Who does she think she is? Barbara Fouché? Right? That's the only other person I know who could possibly take on a challenge so daunting is Barbara. So maybe we should ask Barbara, if you're listening, you should call us immediately and tell us. #Quinton2028. But, all right. What would you ask Shirley Chisholm? Other than that question of what in the world.
That one.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
But definitely, like, the challenges she faced and how, like, in the face of those challenges, like, not getting a lot of speech, like, not being able to do speeches, and I think she was boxed out of debates. Like,
right.
How do you keep going?
Right. And why? Why?
Why, yes.
Yes. You know, I'm quite confident that part of her platform was on women's rights and civil rights. Equality in the workplace would be my guess, because if you could think of a person who in her workplace was not being treated equally, I think right at the very top of that list would be Shirley Chisholm.
I would agree.
Talk about the old boys club, the United States House of Representatives at that time.
Right.
I don't think she could look to her left and look to her right and see much of anybody who looked like her by any description, either gender or color. I mean, this is a lonely, lonely task, being a first in the way that she was. And probably one of my choices would be, because I would never be restricted to one choice, of course, would be Barbara Jordan. I'll tell you the conversation I'd like to have, and that's Barbara Jordan and Shirley Chisholm and Kamala Harris. I would buy tickets to watch them have dinner together. I think that would be a blast.
I think it would be, too.
Yeah, yeah. And what would the music be like?
I don't know.
See, I don't know. I don't know, because these wonderful women that we're talking about are very much of a different generation. I don't know. I don't guess that they were much. They were before rock and roll, I think. You know, they're just the age that they were at when they were in Congress in the late 60s and 70s. They were, I think I could look up their date of birth. Let me see. Barbara Jordan. Yeah, Barbara Jordan's just a little bit younger than my parents. And my parents were not. You know, my dad is 91 now, and, you know, he understood He knew what he was looking at when he saw the Beatles, but that was not his thing.
Okay.
You know, he and my mom were like Perry Como and these guys, you know, they thought they were, they thought that was great. But they were quite tolerant of rock and roll.
Okay.
It's nice that they, you know, let us play what we wanted in the house. They didn't have much choice. They had four kids. You can't negotiate with a crowd like that.
Right.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to have, you know, we're going to have a little, you know, lunch with Shirley Chisholm, if only hypothetically. And then we'll be back with more with Kane Twyman. We're talking about politics and politicians and races and issues. And we got a lot of stuff going on in the area. So we've got a lot more to talk about. So stay with us. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm talking to Kane Twyman, and we're talking about, now we're talking about housing, and, you know, I'm just going to put it out there. Look, we need to build, like, a lot more affordable housing. I am just recently retired from the Orange County Housing Authority's Board of Commissioners, which oversees the Section 8 program and a couple of other HUD-funded programs. And, you know, I was on this board for 10 years, and in many ways, you know, good things happened, not complaining, but in many ways, I felt like after 10 years that we weren't 5 minutes ahead of where we were in 2009. When I came on the board, the country had just plunged into a historic recession, and a lot of the things that the county commissioners had in mind for that board when it was created, and that's a long backstory that's not worth telling for this context, things that they wanted to do like land banking and holding on to big chunks of land in order to build affordable housing, we couldn't do anything. We couldn't do any of it because the credit markets were just locked, you know, in 2009 and 2010 by and large. And everybody was hoping that we wouldn't plunge into a depression. So we had to kind of sit tight for a while and just keep things as they were. But it felt like after a while that we weren't lurching forward into a brand new day like I was kind of hoping that we would be. But so that was a little bit disappointing. But I certainly did. I worked for the Housing Authority in Durham for some years, and I did while I was doing this, too. And I've learned a lot about affordable housing and how HUD funds public and private housing through Section 8. And man, this challenge just is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I think that some of it is because developers look at, you know, an acre of land and they say, well, I can put a modest house on there that's 1,200, 1,400, 1,600 square feet, and I can make, you know, this much money, or I can put a two-story, you know, 2,600 square foot hot tub in the kitchen whopper of a house, and I can make that much money, and it's this much larger amount, and it's the same acre of land. And it's not that they build the house for the same money, but it's there's just a tremendous profit incentive to take each acre of land and maximize it and make the most money off it if you're a developer. And I know that you're on the Affordable Housing Advisory Board, both for the town of Carrboro and for Orange County. And they, boy, these meetings must be very similar, right? Do you find that you're going into one saying, wait, didn't we just talk about this?
Sometimes I do. I feel like earlier in the year when we were talking about like the mobile home parks closing, there was a lot
right.
of redundancy for me in those meetings.
Right.
Just because, and then I would get confused about what was said the meeting before and like which
right.
meeting.
Right.
But I'm finding now that both of the boards are kind of moving in different directions, which is a little interesting, I think, because now the Orange County board, we're starting to focus more on like getting more into the community and like doing a little like going to the meetings and talking to people more than we did
mm-hmm.
my first year on the
mm-hmm.
board. And then the Carrboro board was still kind of focusing on like putting some processes in place. Like
right.
we just did the funding cycle and we're still kind of going
right.
through that application to making to like make it more efficient and
right.
easier for people to use. So just kind of more process focused than the Orange County board at this point.
Right. And that's because I think that I used to cover the Board of Aldermen for the paper, and I think that the Carborough Board, their advisory board, has a little bit more of a direct relationship between that advisory board and the mechanics of how things happen than is the case with the county board. And that's probably just my perception, and some of these things are just depend on who the people are and how hard they push and what you do in your advisory capacity. But, you know, I've always felt like the one of the great things about the Board of Aldermen, or the Board of whatever they end up being, it's very exciting that they're thinking about a name change. I've always thought that one of the great things that they do pretty much all the time is just stop periodically and look back at something that they've done and say, how could we have made this better? This took this amount. This took 2 years. Is there a way that we can look at this and make it take 18 months? Because it seems like 2 years is too long. There's just a lot of things, especially in the development business, that taking too long, making a process too long of a process, can be very harmful to serving everybody's needs and getting the land when it's the most affordable. And land doesn't tend to get cheaper, I found. It does not. It does not. So when you guys, so tell me how you apply political science to advocating for affordable housing. I bet that's a pretty good match.
I think so.
In some ways.
I feel kind of like, I feel like I do a lot more like thinking in terms of like the community and how it affects like more like poorer people and like people look like me and
right.
even students too, because
right.
I joined these boards when I was fresh out of college and
right.
it's very expensive to live here, especially when you're a student.
Yes.
So just kind of taking these populations into consideration and how it'll affect
right.
how it'll affect them.
Right. And not only that, but you know how it will affect them as a practical matter. So I've been to a couple of county commissioner meetings when we've talked about, I've been there as an advocate for affordable housing and been there sitting there next to advocates for the public schools. And for many years, as I told you, I ran for the school board in Orange County. For many years, I still consider myself to be an advocate for strong public schools. And I, you know, and I have to say about the Chapel Hill School District, they can turn people out to advocate for their system. They're very good at it. Good on you, all of you. But when I got up to speak, I said, you know, I love that my friends, my brothers and sisters are here to advocate for kids in public schools. It's fantastic. I'm here to advocate that their teachers have a place to live in this community, because that's the range that's in some ways. And those people have a better chance than whoever served you your lunch today in a restaurant. I want people who work in restaurants. And in fact, at the time I'm thinking of, I had not very long before been in the hospital having my knees replaced. And I said, you know, I want people who work in a hospital to live in that community. And I want people who are firefighters and police officers, I want them to be able to live in that community. And it's increasingly unreachable for them to do that. And I mean, generally, I'm talking about them being able to buy a house, but even renting a decent and affordable house or an apartment, you know, it's just becoming nearly impossible. And in a lot of service jobs, like the job that you have, this is just almost unreachable. And that's ridiculous. We need to, that's telling me that there's, something's broken. And, you know, we can probably fix that, but first we have to throw that on the table and say, what's going on here? You know, this person just brought us our lunch, but they had to drive 45 minutes to get here from home. That doesn't make any sense. Why can't they live here? It's not so great here. It's not so great. No, it's pretty great. You know, we love Chapel Hill, of course.
Yeah, I will say that since I started working at the restaurant in Carborough, I've noticed that, like, a lot of the employees that work there, like, come from, like, Hillsborough or Mebane.
Right.
And, or they live really close but have to work two jobs because it's expensive to live here.
Right. So that's right.
That's another kind of perspective that I'm bringing into the boards. Well, I hope I am. I'm trying to.
Well, I mean, that's great. And they need that voice at the table because, you know, if you're, I mean, I've lived here a long time and I've owned a house in Chapel Hill for a long time. And so I'm kind of away from that idea of how it is to try to find a nice two-bedroom apartment that you can afford. I haven't done that in so long that it's, you know, I know what it costs because of knowing about fair and reasonable rent, fair market rate under HUD because of, you know, work that I do. But in terms of actually looking for housing myself, I haven't been doing it. So I need to have people who are looking to tell me how it is out there. And it's tough out there. That's how it is out there.
It is.
And it's staying tough. So, you know, just to our brothers and sisters in Durham, good on you for passing that gigantic affordable housing bond, which passed by a lot. And so it's clear that, you know, Durham is going in a direction that Durham supports and that people who have an interest in that turned out and voted, which is a big deal. And we're going to come back and talk some more about that very thing, my most favorite thing in the whole wide world, voting. Everybody should vote. I think my cat should vote because I think my cat knows something. I'm telling you. She certainly acts like she does. Excuse me. We're talking with Kane Twyman about all kinds of things, housing and voting and Shirley Chisholm. Fantastic. And you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler, 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back. We're back for our final moments on The Weekend Water Cooler with Kane Twyman. And we're talking about our friend Quentin Harper, hashtag 2028. Every time you should understand why I'm doing this, because every time I talk to Quentin, he has a hashtag. He's always throwing out a hashtag at me. Yeah, I think he just does this probably in conversation with anybody, right? When he wants to emphasize a point, he says hashtag this. And so we're just starting. You and I are the committee to elect Quentin Harper to something in 2028. I don't know if he's old enough to run for president yet in 2028.
I don't know.
We're not going to tell his age. I don't know his age. He's still a very young man. So, but, you know, we will run, you know, we're just going to drop everything in 2027 when he says, I'm ready to run for president. Right?
Yes, definitely.
So, like, I take the eastern half of the country, you take the west, or the other way, we could switch. We could, you know, either way.
Yeah.
And then for, you know, for the 2/3 of the country that we can't cover, we're just going to get Barbara Fushi to, you know, knock on every single door in the United States of America.
Yes.
Because she could do it.
She can.
Yeah. She and Quentin, you know, when she decided she was going to run, she and Quentin, he ran her campaign. Mm-hmm. And I think they knocked on every door in Carper. It seemed like that to them. And, you know, probably there might have been some that they knocked on twice and the people were like, you were just here. what do you want? Why are you back? Have you ever done, you did that with a campaign though, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Is that like as fun as it seems? It doesn't always seem that fun to me.
I think it's my favorite part of campaigning.
Yeah.
Just because.
The retail stuff.
Yeah.
One-to-one.
You can talk to people and people. I mean, sometimes they're like, why are you at my house? But like, but sometimes it's
just
like,
why you always do it with a friend.
People, I think, really kind of open up to you if you like. I try to lead with vulnerability because I like, this is why I'm doing this. I'm passionate about it and I'm trying to give you my passion. And maybe you have it, maybe you share it, maybe you disagree, but usually that gets people to open up and it's nice to hear what people in the community actually want.
And it's interesting that even though people think sometimes that they're not that interested in politics, but then when you start talking to them about the issues, they are interested.
Yeah.
They just don't think of whatever that is as politics. Like, you know, if they want and don't yet have curbside recycling, for example, don't think of that as a political thing. But, you know, the community makes a decision that they're going to offer a service that's going to cost money, that might affect your taxes. That's political. It may not be partisan, though.
Right.
It can be political without being partisan. I'm pretty sure that we don't have a community where Democrats generate more trash than Republicans. It probably would be the other way around. Let's just tell the truth. But, you know, there are just so many more issues, like the cost of an ambulance coming to your house. And should the community pay for that, or should the individual who called the ambulance, should they pay for that? You know, those are things that we elect people to make decisions about. And Penny Rich tells me that, just told me on my show last week or 2 weeks ago, something I was absolutely thrilled to hear, and I bet you will be too, that when years ago, being a county commissioner, you would see people turn up for a public hearing or if they were discussing something very controversial. But that since 2016 and since the Women's March, which was an absolutely stellar experience for me, she said there are lots and lots of people at county commissioner meetings on a regular basis. And it's not because they're there to, you know, shake their fists and raise hell. They're there because they want to know, what are the county commissioners talking about? What's going on? What's up? And I'm just going to show up, and I'm going to meet them before the meeting, and I'm going to talk to them during the break, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to just be there in person and be engaged. You know, I've always thought, you know, they set up the room for these meetings, right? And there's you know, 60 chairs out there or something. Or at the Chapel Hill Town Council, you've got this big council chamber that 80% of the time is completely empty. I don't think that's probably true anymore.
That's awesome.
Which is a great thing. And, you know, Carrboro, the town hall in Carrboro, I love Carrboro, but they need a bigger space for the aldermen. And you know, I've never understood how they got away with that room being so small, because Carrboro is probably one of the most politically engaged towns I've ever seen. I mean, do you go to alderperson meetings? Okay, first of all, should they be alder people or should they be the town council, or what do you think?
I was always partial to the board of alders.
Alders. So they would just say, hi, you know, I'm Quentin Harper. I'm an alder. I'm an alder?
I'm on the board of alders.
Yeah, but I'm an alder. That's the problem.
Yeah,
you say, I'm an alderman, I'm an alderwoman. And that just never feels like it fits.
Yeah.
And Jackie Gist has been saying for many years that she was an alder person and that they were alder people. And I think that's as close to a good fix as there is if you're going to stick with that term. But I do think, you know, they've grown up a lot. The town has grown so much. I think they should become a city council.
Probably.
The population is enough that they can be considered a city now. The city of Carrboro. No! What a terrible idea! Don't have a city of Carrboro. I don't like it. No. Nobody likes the city of Chapel Hill, but that's a fact. Chapel Hill's really a small city. It's definitely not a village, and it's not really a town anymore, even though Town Hall is going to be a town hall no matter what. We debate these things for much too long, I think. Okay, well, Kane, it's absolutely delightful to meet you. I'm so glad that you're working on this housing issue and that you're bringing yourself and your passion about the issues to the table in person. Not in virtual world, on our devices and all that, because even though hashtag Quentin Harper, hashtag 2028, is the hashtags are important and valuable, but being there in person and being a real live person with a real live job and real live interests, you know, that are three-dimensional, there's nothing more important than that. And please don't ever move out of Carrboro. That's all I ask. It's not too much, right?
I'm trying.
Where are you from? I ask at the end of the interview.
I'm from Greensboro.
You're from Greensboro?
Mm-hmm.
And you came all the way here?
I did.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Connecticut, and I came all the way here. Yeah. So I get the I came farther prize. But I'm glad you came. I'm sorry, Greensboro. Sorry about that. We got one of your best people, but, you know, we'll send you one. That's fair, right?
I think that's fair.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. Come back anytime. And Quentin Harper. 2028. And then I'm just saying VP, Kane Twyman, although you might still be too young.
I think
you'd be too young. Okay. Well, you can succeed later down the road. All right. Thank you very much, Shirley Chisholm fan number one. And we'll see everybody around the water cooler in another week. Thanks for joining us.
Follow Gene on Twitter @GeneBolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.